Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Gaurav Dhillon to the broadcast. Gaurav is the chairman and CEO of SnapLogic, an enterprise application and data integration software development company that helps organizations connect business applications and web services. Gaurav had been an early investor in the company and joined it as CEO in 2009. Gaurav is also the chairman and founder of online movie site Jumin. Jumin enables users to download full-length feature films to their computers using the company's proprietary video player. Prior to SnapLogic and Jumin, Gaurav was a co-founder and CEO of Informatica, an early player in the data integration space. Under his leadership, Informatica grew from an idea into a leading public enterprise software company with customers and operations around the globe. He led Informatica through its initial launch, its successful IPO in April of 1999, expansion into Europe and Asia, establishment of alliances with major technology players, and ultimately a broad acceptance of the vision he pioneered in the software industry by the time he left in 2004. Prior to co-founding Informatica, Gaurav spent time at Sterling Software and at Unisys Corporation. Gaurav has a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from Punjab University. I recently caught up with him in his office in San Mateo, California, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed the evolution of cloud computing at great length, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as he covered his plans for SnapLogic moving forward, Principle 5, External Partnerships, as he described the CIO Advisory Board that he has formed at SnapLogic to engage CIOs in the innovation process at his company, as well as some other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Gaurav Dhillon, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Well, Gaurav, your company, SnapLogic, operates at the center of a couple of significant trends. If you speak to any CIO, and I speak to a lot of them, cloud computing and big data are a couple of topics that seem to have been front of mind for a while now, and they don't seem to be going away. I wanted to ask you, actually, your perspectives, as these are topics that you've been thinking about for quite some time, even predating your time at SnapLogic. Can you tell us a bit about your thoughts of these trends, how early we are in the game, so to speak, and what you see for the foreseeable future in these areas?
You know, this is going to be a great decade.
I think it's the logical transition or onward and upward movement of computing from mainframes to open systems in the 90s and the early part of 2000 to more of a distributed model using browsers for everything. No doubt consumer stuff, but now also enterprise stuff and business stuff. So I think it's going to be a great decade of innovation and growth. And within that, the two trends you mentioned, cloud computing, no doubt, you know, we don't just buy books on the web now. We also balance our books on the web, right? And in fact, most people, if you ask them about what do you think of your HR implementation with Workday, they come back and say, what app? I don't know, this Workday thing. Oh, the HR website. So that transition, I think, is happening, is going to continue to gather momentum and steam across different verticals, across different job titles. Big data it is sort of nuanced in that it at the same time is a beneficiary of the fact that people are moving to the cloud. There's much more information coming out of interactions with websites and logs and what have you and machine generated data. But on the other hand, it's somewhat also, you know, in this red hot moment today, it's also a little harder to find the quantifiable return on investment on some of these big data projects. They seem sort of experimental. It's not the same as the early days of business intelligence or where we see some analytics happening. So I think the trends certainly will continue to go cloudy. You will have much more data. And we think the real benefit is to provide business value of big data using cloud computing principles. And we've managed to do that for a number of customers. And if we have a chance, we'll have to talk about that some more.
Would love to hear about it some more, absolutely. How, as you think about your customer set, how sophisticated is the average organization along the lines of the areas that you've just described?
So it's like a yearbook, right? Most likely to succeed type of question, right? but in a sense, the question we asked, we've established a really broad and very, very thoughtful CI advisory board with some incredible talent and experience across a diverse range of industries. So about two meetings ago, we asked them the question, who's least likely to go to the cloud? And it was pretty unanimous. ERP will take a while, and supply chain will take a while, and everything else can't get there fast enough. And that has got to do less with technology. I know there's not really enough high-quality ERP in the cloud available at enterprise grade, and supply chain tends to be very close to manufacturing, and sort of you're on the shop floor and so on. It, to some extent, has to do with the state of play, but it also has to do with the mindset of the other executives in the company who may block the move of financial systems into the cloud. But everything else, going on. Workday, ServiceNow, Salesforce, of course, the 800-pound gorilla in the space, you know, are all doing a great service to the industry by moving things into the cloud.
And you mentioned earlier, such an important topic. Obviously, these are not topics for the CIO alone. He or she needs to operate in concert with other executives in order to make this work, both in terms of divining what it is that ought to be put to the cloud, how to operate differently, which external partners to engage, and so on. But especially now that these are topics that are likely to capture the imagination of the CFO, who still remains one of the chief bosses for CIOs. You mentioned a moment ago that the ROI in a lot of these has been, well, cloudy, to say the least, in a lot of cases. It strikes me, though, that as more organizations move in this direction, perhaps there's more precedent that people can more confidently point to. Is that, in fact, the case?
That is, in fact, the case. I mean, there's no question that by moving a certain application into the cloud, you need less of air conditioning on up. You need less people to rack and stack servers. You need less servers because you don't need to have a backup. You don't need your own power generators. I'm ashamed to admit, I actually bought some power generators in the California power crisis about a decade ago, the company I was running at the time. But, you know, you don't need to worry about those things, and the cloud takes care of them. So there's a very clear ROI on the savings. Now, in terms of productivity gains, I believe that is becoming very clear as well. You have a remote, roving workforce, often that brings their own devices to work, and lighting that up is absolutely critical and very obvious to everybody, from CEO and board of directors on down.
And so it's a topic then that they're becoming more savvy in, clearly. And as you talked to the CIO council that you referenced before, bringing together a number of CIOs to learn from them and to presumably to tell them more about what SnapLogic is doing, what are you learning from them? What are the sorts of new things that they are thinking about as they think about the uses of products and services like those that you offer?
Right. You know, well, there's a real danger of being in Silicon Valley. You stay on the edge and sometimes you're disconnected with the real world. So first and foremost, the CIO Advisory Board keeps our feet on the ground and they anchor us with what enterprises' problems are. And they remind us of the scale and scope. It's breathtaking how large some of these companies are. The problem that a company like a GE might have or a company like a Best Buy might have are all on a very large scale, and also the sort of the issues in healthcare are very different from the issues in high tech, et cetera. So having a diverse group that runs the information technology and oftentimes the software has a big input on the strategy of technology is very, very helpful. Now, diverse people from different backgrounds help keep us connected with what is the order of progression of the cloud, right? So the question you asked earlier about what is not going to go to the cloud, well, that was helpful to us. Because the way we built out our company is through a hub-and-spoke model where we have, if we say so ourselves, an outstanding connectivity architecture through these things called snaps. So a perennial question for us is, what snap should we be building? And the answer is, we should be building snaps for cloud and SaaS applications that CIOs are buying. So building a roadmap for what to connect to, timing that, figuring out what things are very strategic, and how to add value to our partners is all part of what the CIO Advisory Board helps us with. And also when we want to do a breakthrough new product, we're getting ready to do some fantastic things in the new year, we sort of sneak peek them with the CIO Advisory Board and get a feel from them. Are we too far out? Or is this right? What do you think of this? And we get new insight. They go, wow, this is fantastic because integration has been locked up in IT for too long and nobody more than us wants to provide a secure self-service mechanism for business people to get as much information as they want. You know, and we'd love to see more of this type of stuff that makes the $5 integration word more like self-service and hooking things up. You plug it into the wall and it lights up.
Makes sense. Hearing you describe that and hearing actually some of the common themes across all of your answers, Gaurav, brings to mind the fact that one of the powers of your organization is building an ecosystem of customers, an ecosystem of various partners. And I wonder, the way you've just described that, that you build out a roadmap, you find out from CIOs that you're interacting with, what should we be snapping to, and then finding additional partners then to form those snaps, so to speak. Can you talk a bit about how you build out that ecosystem, how you find those partners, how you engage them, how you, in fact, create the snaps that you refer to?
Indeed. So, you know, we live in a world where, because of cloud computing, lots of companies can build lots of very good technology cheaply, and many do. So you have far greater choice today for applications for your knowledge workers in a company. If you go by job title, by industry code, you'll find that there's 2 to 3 SaaS applications there or coming that really help you be more effective at managing your expenses or your marketing campaigns or being able to do a better job of managing your subscriptions. So there are SaaS, very nice, solid SaaS companies that do each of these, and oftentimes there are even vertical versions of that. There's a CRM company, Veeva, that does healthcare CRM, particular specialized healthcare CRM. So I think the only way anybody could provide good integration capability is to open up the ecosystem of connectivity so that customers, partners, system integrators can build these snaps and put them into a snap store. You know, that has been one of the most satisfying things about stepping into SnapLogic as CEO is seeing the broad acceptance of the Snap Store concept and the fact that we have close to 200 snaps now, all the way from Twitter to SAP, all the way from Salesforce to Facebook, Hadoop, HDFS, various kinds of snaps, even for some of the newer types of APIs that are coming out in the world today for telephony and search and the Google applications and such. So that has been very satisfying, and I give a lot of credit to Apple for that. You know, at the time we were doing this, it was so clear that the winning smartphone was going to be the one with the best apps. And we think the winning integration play is the one that has a lot of snaps.
Well put. That makes a lot of sense, certainly. I wanted to actually take a step back, Gaurav, and talk a little bit more about your career arc. You spent time at Sterling Software, at Unisys, before taking on the chief role at Informatica, and now, of course, on to SnapLogic. And I wonder if you could actually, if you wouldn't mind, take a little stroll down memory lane and talk a little bit about your own career and the steps along the way that have led you to where you are now. There seem to be certainly some common themes there. I wouldn't be surprised if there were some diverging paths as well. But can you talk a little bit about where you've been and where you see yourself and your company going?
Well, thank you. I think, first of all, I've been lucky and very fortunate to time things well. I think if I were to sort of summarize some of those, I'd say mostly I've been very blessed to know early on that I love technology, that I like this field, and I really want to do more things in this field every opportunity I get. So I started as a technologist, as a programmer, Sterling Software, then sort of first at Unisys, then Sterling Software in the very early days of distributed computing. There was this wonderful 386-based operating system by Convergent Technology that was being OEM'd by Unisys, and I helped hack the operating system and so on. And I'm, in a sense, a child of the microprocessor age, and it was great fun. But what sort of became apparent is that this move towards Windows and Unix and Oracle, these sorts of client-server things, is going to be huge. And it was sort of all happening at the same time. You know, we had now commercially available windowing system in Windows 3.1. 3.0 didn't quite work as well as designed. But 3.1 certainly was good, and it was everybody could have a Windows interface, stuff that we could only get in graduate school from Xerox or Sun. Everybody could get it. My mom could have it. And at the same time, in business, you were moving from mainframes to Unix, and you were moving your databases and so on. So I think the theme, I would say, through my career has been to be excited about rather than frightened of big changes in the computing era, and then try to find a way to leap in and add value to that big computing change. I'd probably say the arc at Informatica was great timing, excellent team, just phenomenal business partner, terrific investors, around the move from mainframes to client server. People were building data warehouses using client server technology, and they needed really strong Windows-based, Unix-based technology to make that all happen. That was Informatica's ETL success, and is very widely received even today. With SnapLogic, I think our timing is rather good on some of these trends towards cloud and some of the other onward extensions of distributed computing, like people bringing their own device. You know, every time I fly, somebody next to me is reading a lot of business stuff on an iPad. In fact, just the other day, Friday, I was coming back from Boston. The gentleman next to me, unasked, showed me proudly that he now just carries his iPad, and what used to be a 70-page board of directors report is a slim little iPad. Like, his back is better because of the iPad. This is how he fixes back problems. I'm like, good, good. You know, chiropractors of the world, beware, tremble, because the iPad is taking your business away. You know, so this sort of thing is going on in larger and larger numbers. And, you know, it may be frightening to others, but to me, as sort of a
a person who grew up with technology had the gift of parents who encouraged risk-taking behavior, entrepreneurial types of things. I feel incredibly blessed that I've had the opportunity to jump in at a computing epoch change and add some value, come up with some innovative ideas, make some mistakes, you know, skin my knees and so on it. And so that would, I guess, how I'd summarize some of the adventures thus far.
That's wonderful. You know, I was reading a blog post from Ben Horowitz, who was talking about some of the earlier conversations that you and he had about SnapLogic, and he was making the mention that he typically doesn't like to partner with people who've had as dramatic a success as Informatica has been because he worries about their motivation. And I wonder, actually, I mean, obviously, just hearing you speak, the passion is so clearly comes across. And I'm curious, how do you maintain that across your career? How do you, as I understand it, you're working harder now than you ever have worked. And so I'm curious how that passion remains.
You know, look, I love doing what I do, right? I love building things. I wonder how they work. I want to connect them, and I want to make them work. And sometimes for relaxation, I take something like my mother-in-law brought in an old mixer that she needed me to look at. And of course, she can buy a new mixer, and we can get new mixers, but they know that this is how I relax. Like, this is what I do to make me happy. So, you know, it keeps me going doing it, you know. And I think also with regards to sort of quote-unquote success, I think it's a bit of a mirage, really. If somebody sets out to do something to make money, I think they may, but they're usually unhappy doing it. On the other hand, if you set out to say, look, we're going to change the world, we're going to build this company that is the number one in this area, and if you attain that goal, wealth is the byproduct, but it's not the main reason you did it. And as a result, there's no sort of marker that tells you you reach 10 miles per hour and now you can leave. So you kind of always keep doing it. And to me, it's about looking at change, feeling excited, exhilarated by change, and figuring out how to make it all work and how to connect it, and then, you know, getting pleasure from that. And if we do our work right, you know, then that will create a great company. And if we do it wrong, it'll create a modest company. But I think that's basically how I look at it.
That's great. Because those are really wonderful insights. Hopefully there are more people that can follow in your footsteps and apply that same kind of logic. One of the things we've been preaching a lot in the CIO community that we're involved with is the need for the CIO to think more of his or her job as partially, at least, as kind of an R&D function for the organization, constantly trolling the technology landscape, understanding the trends that are ascending in importance, and then applying those that are relevant back to the organization, and then having a bit of a P.T. Barnum aspect to what they're doing. You've been somebody who has been ahead of trend, who has gotten deeply into the zeitgeist and obviously been successful multiple times over with the bets that you have made. For CIOs, for IT executives, even for business executives who are looking to find ways to read the zeitgeist perhaps earlier than others, what sorts of lessons do you draw from in terms of having that sort of R&D edge to the organization?
I'd say one of the things that is hardest to teach is a natural curiosity. So just getting back into the very core sort of human element of this, I think those CIOs who have a natural curiosity are more likely to enjoy change rather than be frightened of it. So, you know, they should look in their own hearts and say, is this something that we like or don't like? Because sure shooting, there's easier ways to make a living than a CIO. That's the hot ticket. So I think that's one at a very, very personal level. But then at a making bets level, the role of the CIO is changing. And people really have to think about themselves as a chief integration officer almost, right? Now, again, that may seem a little self-serving, so let me sort of double-click into that, explain what I mean. You know, we don't hire people to rack and stack software anymore. One of our customers, Pandora, has 38 SaaS applications that runs their business. We integrate about 18 of them. We hook them up for them. But they basically have the ERP of Pandora for Pandora with help from SnapLogic. And what they've done there, Rich and some of the team there and the CFO, Steve Cakebread, have done is they've created a tapestry, a fabric of their own ERP by using orchestration and integration as the driving principles to make that company successful. And I think this is a very, very large, large change in what it takes to be a CIO today. You are an orchestrator of capabilities. You're not an information officer. You don't have to worry about HR and payroll, or you shouldn't be. Of course, you have to worry about some things that are custom that have to be built by you and your team and maybe part of your competitive advantage. But anything that is a cost item and that you can turn into the cloud gives you more money to be more innovative and to do new things. And I think that role is sneaking up on a lot of people, and they're not really able to wake up to that because they've gotten the thin, you know, as Steve Covey used to say, the thick of thin things
or they're just caught in the day-to-day break fix and they're not able to up their scope and say, well, what should we do next year?
That makes a lot of sense, Gaurav. One last question. We've naturally talked about a number of important trends that you are currently riding, that you're shaping and bending, in fact. And I wonder, are there others, as you look forward, say, 2 or 3 years out, are there others that haven't naturally come through our conversation that particularly excite you?
Well, I'd say probably we've talked about cloud and big data, but I think there's probably two other things I want to talk about. You know, I grew up around the business intelligence industry when we're building Informatica and so on, but I think that is going to become analytics. You know, the joke is it doesn't matter who won the election, really Nate Silver won the election. Being able to use those algorithms and go from search to recommendations, go from endless adventures in drilling using traditional BI tools to more analytics and being able to light up strategy, pricing. I mean, most gaming companies, some of our customers are using us to get game data out of, you know, stuff like Activision's Call of Duty game that comes into a Hadoop cluster, and then you combine that with a customer master that might be out in the cloud somewhere in Salesforce or something. But what you're really looking for is analytics that help you decide pricing and fraud detection and revenue optimization. And I think the role of analytics is going to just grow and grow with a combination of how inexpensive it is and how easy it is to get a lot of things going on. The recent Amazon Redshift announcements to get them a plug, I think, is an indication of things to come. The other one, and I think, you know, we talk about it, but it's astounding how big it is. Mobility is a monster. Being able to light up mobile devices, you know, it's sort of a little bit double-edged because we're never away from work because work is always in our pocket. But at the same time, we're able to do things that we otherwise wouldn't be able to do. So enabling mobile applications, I think, is a huge imperative for the CIO. You know, what's taken place and how we use mobile apps to do so many things, from finding restaurants, to listening to music, to getting the weather and show times and so on. You know, that is all going to, I think, have equivalency on the enterprise side. And lighting that up, enabling that, having good middleware layers so you don't tightly couple your mobile app to a particular mobile OS or to a particular back office application, financial system, I think is very, very critical. So those are the two, I think, that have just enormous run ahead of them.
I'll follow back around to the analytics one, just one more moment, Gaurav, and ask, what people implications does that have? There are obviously some new roles or maybe roles that have been around that are going to become more important. But as you think about how analytics work and the different traditional disciplines, business units, divisions of the organization, how they need to work together, and likewise, the emergence of the kinds of roles in the organization to harness the data in a way to create the appropriate analysis to develop value ultimately. What are the people implications in your mind?
Right. I think there's going to be greater shortages in hence deep of data scientists. Like, this is going to be the unobtainium, you know, individual for people to hire. There's too few of them. They're hard to find. They don't flock together. And there are some people, some innovative things like Kaggle, who's trying to set up a community of data scientists and others, which might be the way to go. But I think that's going to change. That is a hard job to fill, but there will be many more people like that required in an organization. And I think the other piece is sort of we will start to think about the infographic as a management decision-making tool, right? It is pervasive in the common literature. You can't read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal without an infographic popping up. Every newspaper you read, there's at least one or two very clever, very thoughtful infographics. So think of a future where we almost are required to have infographics to succeed in business. How are they going to be populated? What are the industrial design elements of them? So the Edward Tufte piece, how do you get the information into them? How do you free up the people who do design and data science from the hunting gathering of data? Is there a role for something like SnapLogic to free them up from the drudgery of excavating information in the company? So I think that sort of is an evolution that is going to go in my mind.
Excellent. Well, Gaurav Dhillon, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World-Class IT and sharing your perspectives and even taking a little stroll down memory lane with us. It's really been a great conversation, and I think a lot of great insights that our listeners will be able to draw from.
Thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure. You had excellent questions, and you know, I enjoyed talking about these things.
The Forum on World-Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open-source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat understands that selecting a cloud architecture is an important and strategic IT decision for today's enterprises. That's why Red Hat helps customers maximize their existing investments, preserve flexibility, and avoid lock-in to prepare for the demands of tomorrow. Learn more at redhat.com/opencloud today. listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Cool, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.